design little dioramas, right, Abby?
Yes, she does. Leslie has many, many talents.
Right, right, right. Anyway, so that is me, and I'm going to let Abby introduce her expertise and knowledge and all of that. So,
I'm Abby, and I am one of the wildfire mitigation specialists who works with Wildfire Partners. So I have done many of the assessments in Boulder County, but not all. So, and I'm not going to be doing yours, George, unfortunately, although I'd love to.
I just was checking Mike's coming up.
Mike
Palomara.
Okay, so he's not even with our program. He's with your fire department.
He's with your fire district. So, and we can talk about that, Abby. That might be actually.
We definitely can.
Yeah. Doug, are you already in the program? Have had an assessment or?
I mitigate myself like crazy. Okay. I'm a Sawyer. We've got about 200 acres, and I spend all my time mitigating, with the exception of now, because the mountain pine beetle loves freshly cut trees, so I don't. I'm out of hold for a while, but.
Okay.
And what general neighborhood are you living in?
We're down here. I'm on the southern Douglas County line, next to El Paso County. We're just near Monument.
Oh, so you're down in. So this is fun. We're getting people from outside the area, Abby.
Yeah.
So it might be good to explain like what we do, what the fire district does, you know, kind of since, yeah, that may be a good explanation, right, Abby, to start with?
Yes. Definitely. Okay. I think it's a good idea.
We did want to let you know a couple things off the top. So we do an audio recording of this because people just like to, you know, like a lot of people share common problems. And so we post it on the website. So if people want to listen back and, you know, hear what we talked about. So we just wanted to let you know that. And normally when we
now, so we don't say anything stupid.
Yeah. and I will edit.
Well, you can just say, this is Doug, if you're going to say something stupid.
Yeah. Abby knows I do edit. Do some editing sometimes. So that's that. And then normally when we do these events, because we've been doing since April, you know, we've had more people. We just switched to a new date and time, and so we realized that a lot of people might not have caught on with that. But normally if there's a larger group, we tell you to type your question in through the chat feature. But honestly, unless we get a whole bunch of people to jump in here in the next 10 minutes, I think it's fine the way it is. If there are more people that join, if you want to, you know, hit chat and type in your question, that's fine. I'm just going to do it right now so you can see it, so how it works. Also, I just heard a barking dog. And so we do suggest that unless you're talking at the moment, you might want to use the mute button because, yeah, I also have dogs. I think we all do. And sometimes that can be a little disruptive if there's a whole bunch of noise going on in the background. So those are kind of the basics of, you know, how we normally do these events. And we'll see if there's more people to hop in or not. But I guess off the top, yeah, talk about what Wildfire Partners is versus what the fire district is. Abby, do you want to kind of explain a little bit of that?
I will do my best.
Okay.
So Wildfire Partners is a program run out of the Boulder County community planning and permitting, which used to be our land use department. Basically, it's the permitting department, and but it's Wildfire Partners is a voluntary program for homeowners who live in the western side of Boulder County, which is the fire-prone side of the county, and we provide sort of like personal outreach and education, one-on-one assessments to people where one of our wildfire mitigation specialists will go to people's homes and spend a couple hours with the homeowners walking around looking at not only the vulnerabilities of your forest, but also like actually really taking a close look at the structure itself and looking for vulnerabilities in your home to ember, particularly to ember incursion, which is, as we may all know at this point, like the number one cause of home ignition in wildfires these days.
Yeah.
So and that's then, kind of brief. And then the fire districts, a lot of fire districts, including the one that George lives in, which is Boulder Mountain, have mitigation crews, and they, you know, to various or lesser degrees, go around and provide the forestry services, kind of the Doug side of things, to homeowners in their district or sometimes out of their district as well. Cutting trees, doing weed whipping, you know, whatever other services they might be providing. It kind of varies a little bit from one department to the other.
Boulder Mountain is also one of our approved forestry contractors. So, yeah, so just to let George know, if you do apply through our program and you get an assessment, you're eligible for a 50% award to defray the cost of the forestry work. And so, like, Boulder Mountain would be one of the contractors you can call to bid and, you know, have them say, oh, it's going to cost this much to do your forestry work, and then we would cover 50% up to $2,000. So,
okay.
So there's a little added bonus for you to do Wildfire Partners. So we want this to be, you know, for you. So if you have questions off the top, we did have a kind of a topic we were going to discuss tonight, but is there questions you have specifically about mitigation or Doug about mitigation or what Wildfire Partners does or anything else?
Or about home hardening as well, because that's, you know, something we both are very familiar with also. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a little bit more personal than when we have 15 or 20 people on the call. So I'd be really interested to know what each of you, and maybe I'll go in turn of seniority of attendance, which would make George the first and Doug the second who joined us, to just throw it out if you have any questions or just even any weird questions that have been on your mind since you moved into your house or came out here.
In fact, I think it's actually really helpful to listen and listen. And Doug obviously has been doing quite a bit of work. I am coming from Chicago. I don't know anything. So I'd love to listen for a little while, actually. I mean, picking up terms like ember incursion and home hardening, these are new phrases. I get the concept behind them. I will be curious to learn about all those things. But what, Doug, if you have questions and you have a reason for being here other than my naivete, please go ahead and start your
I appreciate it. You have to, I don't have the paperwork right now. I can get this in my office behind me. There's three zones around your house that you've got to know about. Those are the most important things. Also, there's so much to say, but let me just brief touch it. Mitigation is, you don't mitigate your house on year one and then live happily ever after. Mitigation is every year. And like I say, pine trees are kind of like people. Every year we age, things get lower. So the branches will droop. I mean, you go ahead and look at a beautiful field of pine trees. It looks great. Next year, you're going to have dead branches on the bottom. So it's... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, our analogy we've been giving this year, because it's so pertinent, is we say pine trees are like, our conifers are like people. They need social distancing, just like people need to be social distancing.
And I really love the gravitational thing. That is a really...
I know, that one made me laugh. I was just like,
Thank you for that.
My pleasure. There's an award-winning film that one of the filmmakers did at a Black Forest fire.
Oh, right.
Which
I'm taking
we
notes.
Were pre...
Oh, Doug, we lost you for a second.
We were pre-evac, and across the street south of us was mandatory evac. So, damn. You there?
A little freezing.
Yeah.
Am I on now or off? Tell me if I'm on.
You are on a little bit.
Okay.
What was Black Forest fire, Doug? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that was south of us, like a couple miles, and it was burning up towards our house, and that's when I really woke up.
I think, if I have this right, it's the most destructive fire in terms of number of homes, I think, in Colorado's history. I think that's right.
Either that or I think the Hayman fire, one of the two.
The Hayman was larger, but
the Black Forest.
Yep, you're right. Go ahead.
Either have your house taken care of or buy a chainsaw and learn how to do a chainsaw if you have a lot of acreage. And if you buy a chainsaw, I cannot stress the safety, because yes, I've used a chainsaw for many years. I finally went to the Colorado Fire Camp down there in Salida or something, wherever it is. And it was a week, 2-3 days in class, 2-3 days in the field. And I held pride because I was the only one who had chainsaw experience. So I went out there, act Mr. Big Pants, and then they had to put me on special alert because I was doing everything wrong. So I learned how to do it the right way and know how to do a chainsaw correct is strongest suggestion.
I
know, but I was going to say, there's an award-winning film taken in the Black Forest Fire, and the guy, the filmmaker, stood out beside a house, and the fire was burning toward the house. And the film was condensed down to roughly 8 minutes. I can't recommend that enough. Because a fire slowly comes towards a house on the ground, bypass all the tree stumps. The firefighters are there, you know, moving the lounge chairs and, you know, just taking their time. Fire burns to the house, around the house, and it's gone. That's a really good film to watch because it shows what you got to do. You got to keep your grass low. Mm-hmm. That's the major thing.
And it's a documentary about the Black Forest Fire. Do I have that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Got it. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
You know, the one thing we had, I was going to suggest to George as well. You know, I don't know if you've been to our website yet, but we have a lot of information on there, and we've been doing a blog that talks about specific things like, you know, how do you get your deck ready for wildfire season? Like what, you know, we talk about the home hardening that Abby talked about. You know, we talk about being prepared to evacuate and, you know, do you have a plan for your pets and stuff like that? So, you know, if you haven't looked at our little things on the website, that might be helpful.
And that website is?
Wildfirepartners.org.
Thank you.
Abby, it's so weird because I know we had a plan to talk about something, but I'm wondering if we should talk about embers because, you know, rather than talking about red flag warnings or whatever, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, hey, Doug, do you have anything that you had specifically? I don't want this to be a rudimentary lesson if you've got things that you need to cover.
Oh, no, I've taken every class that I could take. Anything to do with fires, I go to. My wife says, why do you go to them? Because I learn every time I go, I learn something.
Okay.
But I'm in a different situation because what I did is I went out and bought a 6x6 military fire tanker, and I put a pump on it so I can fight fires if one came to my house. I've got a D60 dozer. I'm all set. I'm out of the ordinary because when evacuation comes, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. So George, we do want to let you know that you are not unique, like coming from an urban area and not you know, learning all this stuff. So don't get overwhelmed. That's what we're here for.
To be fair, I mean, I have done chainsaw work at my home, I've been up to the North Woods and I've done in Wisconsin. I'm familiar with some of the elements, but I never want to assume that I know too much. I'd rather come in as just the two terms already that I've heard about the amber incursion and home hardening. I get it. I like it. And I know about the 5 yards. I know a little bit about the spacing and 40 trees per acre. We've only got a couple acres, but we've got a lot of trees. So,
Real quick, the film on Black Forest is called How Firefighters Are Protecting Homes and the Black Forest Fire.
Okay.
Great.
And if you tune on to that, it's really, really neat.
Okay.
It's not like I'm into S&M when I say neat. I mean, it's a forest fire, but it's tragic. But you can see how if you do your landscape, it will be contained. Your house is more apt to make it.
Right. Abby, I think you should maybe we should talk a little bit about home hardening and embers, since that is something that's, you know, not familiar.
Yeah. Gladly. I mean, I guess as you're picking up, the embers are sort of the biggest threat during a wildfire. And is my connection good? Because I feel like, are things freezing or are you guys smooth?
It just went out for a second, but now we've got you back.
I'm like, I can move into the house. Okay. To maybe if this is too far away from my modem or whatever. But I mean embers are a powerful force and sort of surprisingly so, because you think of them, they can't catch large fuels on fire. So the real key to preventing ember ignition is keeping small, like pine needles, dried grasses, dried leaves, things like that, away from any combustible part of your home, and making sure that your house doesn't have any holes or gaps that could allow embers to penetrate into it. And, you know, George, for the part of your house I see, which is stone, seems like a pretty good building material.
Okay.
I don't know if you also have, like, wood siding on your house.
Oh, yeah. The top half of the house is cedar.
Yeah. So one of the things to look for is, like, bird holes, because that happens a lot where birds are going to penetrate your house. And, oh, look, Doug's got, like, the brochure.
Is that from, like, the NFPA? What are you holding up, Doug?
I'd like to say that all the seminars I spoke in front of a couple of groups.
Something from Firewise.
And, yeah, in front of a couple neighborhood groups, and the neighborhood across the street asked me to speak. And I just tell people that it's so important that you do these things and keep an eye on it. And I've got some great sheets from these seminars. If you're interested, I can email them.
Oh, sure. You can send them that. You can send anything to info@wildfirepartners.org. But, George, I did want to let you know, like, when Abby was talking about embers, just to give you some perspective, the most destructive fire in Boulder County's history was the 4 Mile Canyon Fire of 2010, and 83% of homes were ignited through ground fire, and much of those through embers.
Okay.
So people have this vision in their mind that, like, oh, you know, the trees are going to catch fire and that's what's going to set my house on fire. And in reality, what often happens is it's not the trees that catch your house on fire. It's embers that blow ahead of the flame front. And those embers can actually blow from a couple miles away and start spot fires. And so that's what recent fire science is saying to us, is that home hardening against embers and taking care of the first 5 feet around your house, that's as critical, if not more critical, than, like, taking care of your trees farther out, if that makes sense. So that's why we're talking about that.
A lot of times your embers can go underneath the eave vents into your attic.
I'm just thinking about some of the, you know, I've been messing around with, I mean, literally I've been in the house for 2 weeks, not even.
Yeah.
So looking around, it's like, that's a hole. I remember that I was looking at that's where the bees were going in. And, you know, so if that's an entryway for a bee's nest, then there's going to be something for that's obviously something to be hardened.
So
how do you harden it? Do you caulk it, or you fill it with foam or what?
This is Abby's job. That is what her job is. She will come out, or one of our other mitigation specialists, and they are going to come to your house, and they are going to look at the exterior of your home, and they're going to look at your roof and your eaves and all of those things. So she can talk more about that. Okay. So go ahead, Abby.
But yes, I mean, a couple things. One is, like, the size that we consider appropriate in terms of, like, a gap would be, like, under an eighth of an inch.
Okay.
So one of our big tools is eighth-inch metal screening, which is also called hardware cloth. Leslie and I found out by going to the hardware store and asking for screening, and we were like, cloth? No. And they're like, it's metal. So if you go to, like, McGuckin's in Boulder or something, you can ask for that and make sure you say eighth-inch. And you can cover over vents that have larger screening with something smaller, or that have gaps in them. You can crumple screening up and use it to plug holes. You can use metal, sheet metal, to patch things. Bird holes are a little frustrating because the birds tend to try to peck a new hole right next to the one you just patched. So I've heard some very amusing strategies that people have to, like, discourage birds from coming in, like, my sort of personal favorite is the woman who's like, yeah, I get up at 5 a.m. and I shoot the birds. And I was like, oh, and she's like, with a super soaker. And I was like, oh, with a super soaker? Which I thought was hilarious.
The previous homeowner has netting on the side of the house, very loose netting held together with sheets held together with carabiners that are attached and they kind of come down so that, because they had woodpeckers going into the side of the house.
There's a bonus too. I don't know if I told you this, Abby, because like the thing that we found, so as we told you all, Abby and I are mountain homeowners as well as working for Wildfire Partners. So, you know, we're part of the program and we wear a homeowner hat as well as a Wildfire Partners employee hat. And we have had bats that got into the house, Abby. And we realized it was because we had a gap, like, up near the eave. And that's how the bats were getting in. So, you know, obviously if the bats could get in, the embers can get in. So by filling that hole, we stopped the bats from getting in the house and from embers from getting into the house.
So one of the things that we use up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin was steel wool. You know, we just get that and we plug it in to plug the holes out the roads. Is that something that's effective as well, or do you prefer something along the lines of this hardware cloth?
Abby?
I think it just really depends on, like, the location and what you're trying to do. Like, plugging a bird hole, the steel wool might be fine. It's if the birds aren't going to be able to move it. I think the thing is that people tend to use the hardware cloth or the metal plate or something because you can actually screw it in and attach it, and it's less likely to get removed by an aggressive woodpecker who probably would take that steel wool out of there in a minute, you know?
Use it, right.
They're very committed to their spot once they've fallen in love with it, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, trial and error, there's really no, you know, especially with the birds, there's not like a magic bullet or silver bullet or whatever that's going to work on them. You know, here's the other one that I think is really funny that somebody told me about that they did for birds is they said they got like a 3-foot-long rubber party snake or like rubber snake at a party store, and they tacked it to the edge of their eaves where it like wiggled in the wind. And they said not only did they lose their woodpeckers, but they generations later, they have not returned to that house. So,
I've seen lots of sparkly, twisty things like party.
Yeah, those aren't very effective from what I've been told. And the owls also not so effective.
Okay. I do want to welcome Steve. I see Steve has jumped in with us, so welcome to Steve. So, Steve, we are trying a new day and time, and so we don't have quite as many people tonight, so we're trying to make this a little more personal for the people who have joined us, and right now we're having a conversation about home hardening and preventing embers from getting into your home, because obviously if embers get inside your house, that's really bad for your house. Like, it's likely going to set your home on fire. So, you know, that's why that's so important. So welcome to Steve. Steve, can you hear us? I don't know.
I scanned that piece of paper. Does anybody want me to email it? Because it's got 6 squares of really simple, valuable information that will instruct you how to mitigate around your home.
I'd love it.
Anybody want it?
Yep.
Go ahead, George. Go ahead.
You know what? I can do it. I can put it. I'll type it into the. With my last name, it'll be a challenge for you. So I'll just.
And Steve, if you are not able to talk, if you want, you can use the chat. Or if it's just mute, you can try unmuting.
Okay.
It went away. I got the GDOU, and that was it.
AIRE.
AIRE, yep.
@gmail.com.
Okay.
And for both of you, I'm going to type one more email address in here. So for anyone who has a question for our staff, you can email that to info@wildfirepartners.org, and I just typed that into the chat.
Oh, good. Thank
you.
INFO. Okay. Oh, okay, Steve does have a comment here, Abby. So he says, my struggle to finish hardening my outside is the hard earth perimeter. Let's talk about that, the immediate zone, right? The first 3 to 5 feet. So, Yeah.
So I'm curious, and I'll talk for just a moment or two about it, but I'm kind of curious, Steve, what the challenge you're having is. Like, hauling around, gotten a half. Okay. Running out of oomph is kind of the what I'm hearing here. I think just taking your time or hiring some help if you have the means to do that, or the old Tom Sawyer way of get a couple of six-pack of beer. And I mean, I know this is coronavirus time, so maybe that one's a little harder to do, but you know, getting some people to come and help you work on it. Cause
hey, where does Steve live? Because I have another idea for him, Abby. Where do you live, Steve? Let's see. 100 times more than all the tree mitigation I've done. Maybe Steve will type in where he lives. Cold Creek Canyon. Oh, too bad, right? Okay. not too bad for Steve, but too bad that we don't have, because what I was going to let people know, anyone who lives in the Netherland area, we have some group called Teens Inc. that is a crew that can help with that right around the home, that, you know, immediate zone, right, Abby? So
right.
I'm going to suggest that they could apply for that, but sounds like he's a little farther away. So
yeah, I think that's kind of closed for the summer too, but you know, I guess I would say, you'd be certified
Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, one thing I do want to say to Steve is we have folks who joined the program in 2014, which was our first year, and are still plugging away. So don't be disheartened.
Yeah,
you know, everything you do is just taking you one step closer to the finish line.
And Steve, good on you for doing all your other required items. So you should feel really good about that. So that George understands what we're talking about. When we complete your assessment, we send you a detailed Wildfire Partners report. And part of that report has required items for you to complete to become certified through our program. And so what Steve is telling us is that he has completed all his required items except for putting this barrier around his home. So,
and what are you certified for? I'm certified, you know.
Yeah, you're certifiable. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's a great question. What does certified get you, right, Abby? Makes you feel good, right? No,
definitely makes
you
feel good.
I got a participation award.
Oh, Steve writes to get a Wildfire Partner sign. Yeah.
So it's defensible. So, you become a defensible building?
So the Wildfire Partner sign, and I don't know if you've seen any of these in your neighborhood, George, but that you do get that when you're certified, and it does indicate to firefighters that you have done mitigation work. So there is a piece that is really important, especially if you have a longer driveway and, you know, the firefighters don't know if you've done anything or not. The other piece that we've done with our program is that the certificate works to help you with your homeowner's insurance.
Good. Okay.
So our certificate is accepted by insurance companies as proof of adequate fire mitigation. So like that piece that might hold them back from providing you insurance, by providing the certificate that says to them, yes, we've done the fire mitigation.
I was stunned that when the place that I lived outside of the Chicago suburban areas was kind of in well, there's farmland, what is what it was, and basically you had to have flood insurance. I was required by FEMA to have flood insurance. I was like, great, I don't have to have flood insurance. Now, fire insurance. When I was getting the fire insurance or asking for the insurance on my home, they did not tell me I had to have fire insurance. They said it covers it. And I said, wildfires? So I know there's more work I need to investigate to get that done. Again, we've only been in the house for a week or so, so yeah. I want to get all this information to find out what I need to get.
But that would be the other piece, because pretty much all the insurance companies accept our certificate. And so while it doesn't per se give you a discount with a specific company, it may allow you to get more competitive quotes from more companies.
Sure.
And
sure.
That in the long run is a good thing.
Right. So. Okay. Thank you.
And I will say this, that your homeowner's insurance will cover wildfire.
Oh yeah.
Probably why it's as expensive as it is.
Yes.
I mean, you should read your policy, obviously, or talk to your broker, but, you know, mine does. I mean, but I'll tell you this, it went from $800 a year in 2003 when we moved into our house to, like, over $5,000 a year now. So that's what wildfire has been doing to our insurance rates. And
my flood insurance on a creek, a tiny little creek, was $2,300 a year just for, yeah. Never, you know, it flooded my backyard. But
there is something I would like to talk about because Steve brought this up. Like, that is the most challenging piece for him because I think that's what we focused on this month on the blog was that immediate zone around the house. And why I am finding this so interesting, Abby, because Abby knows I've been traveling because I had a family situation in the Midwest. And it's so interesting to think about where I grew up and how, like, you always planted things right up against your house, right under the windows, you know, like, right. For curb appeal and for landscaping and for privacy. And, you know, and it's kind of can be startling for people when they move from that environment to a mountain environment to be like, oh yeah, that's not, you know, that's not the greatest idea to, you know, plant things right up against your house and under your windows and all that. So Abby, do you want to talk a little bit about why that is?
Well, I mean, I guess the reason why is obviously that those items are combustible and they're bringing heat closer to your siding. But, you know, I also wanted to sort of talk a little bit about Steve and his comment, which I thought was hilarious about, you know, he said he's volunteered hundreds of hours for Saws and Slaws, which is a program that where neighbors get together and they do forestry mitigation on somebody's property and they pile the slash and they chip it and they get it all done and then they have a meal together, which is the slaws part of it. And yet, Steve, nobody from all that, no gratitude, dude. I mean, so sad that no one wants to come over and like share the rock hauling.
I mean that barrier around the house, I do feel like that's a huge deal for a lot of people, Abby, like, you know, because it's just a lot of work. I mean, it really is. I mean, you know, so.
Right. And I want to say two things about it. Sorry, Doug, go ahead.
Well, it should be 0 to 5 feet on that. I sent one to George and I just sent one to you guys on info. And 0 to 5 feet is called a clean and green, non-combustible, basically just cleared out. And don't, and what is it? I get mixed up between ferns and junipers. Junipers are the little ones, right?
Oh, junipers are kind of, well, they can be trees or shrubs.
Okay, the little
they are the
junipers,
worst vegetation.
Get rid of them.
Exactly.
Junipers are what you don't want.
In terms of fire, they are the worst. I'm not trying to, like, you know, pick on the junipers. But Abby has a great story that one you told about the flammable, you should tell that story about the juniper. So,
oh, the firefighter told me?
Yes.
Yeah, so this firefighter was telling me a story of how he was standing in somebody's yard watching a fire burn like 100 feet away from him, and suddenly the juniper next to his leg just caught fire from the radiant heat. He was just like, we hate those things. They've got to go. And Steve, hilarious. If power tools were involved, you'd have tons of volunteers. And I get that. And my advice is just keep plugging away at your own pace. But the most important thing, as Doug was pointing out, is just get rid of the vegetation. Like, adding the weed barrier and gravel is fantastic, kind of like cherry on top of the sundae. But once the vegetation is gone, the fire danger is definitely really greatly reduced or eliminated.
Right.
And the other thing about clearing out that zone is just being able to maintain it and, you know, get in there with a rake or a, what do you call it, power tool that you use to blow needles away? A blower?
Like the leaf blower. The leaf blower.
Thank you. The vegetation replants itself, and that is definitely the reason to go for the, ultimately get the weed barrier down and the gravel on top of it. But, I feel your pain. I mean, one thing you can do about the vegetation, especially in the summer, is there's a euphemism called eco-mulching, but basically you're killing it by smothering it under black plastic and cooking it. Mm-hmm. And you can just, like, lay black plastic down in that, like, 5-foot-wide or 3-foot-wide even strip around your house, weight it with some rocks, and, like, in, you know, 6 weeks or so in this heat, those plants will be dead.
And for George and Doug, I don't, and maybe even Steve, I don't know if Steve's aware of this either, because we realize, like, trying to complete these things, it's hard to think of different ways, maybe, or visually how it looks. And so we do have a photo gallery on the website. Like, you know, here's how you do this non-combustible barrier, and it gives you some photos and some ideas of how to accomplish that. So
you're basically talking about kind of hardscape.
Yes.
Exactly.
The landscaping. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
And interesting. I mean, to Steve's point, if you just building on these comments, if you get that barrier built and you put the weed barrier down and you put the gravel down, beautiful boulders on top of that look great. You know, it could be. Is that not? Did I just go too far?
No. You're fine. The one thing that I told Abby that we found out that was so interesting at our own home is we changed our deck. And weed barrier, the quality of the weed barrier really matters, because we had done it on part of the house ourselves, and we spent a bit more money, and the contractor did under the deck, Abby, and he used this really cheap weed barrier, and the weeds started growing up through the gravel, you know, so it seems like a weird thing to think about, like, weed barrier, but it's good to think about, you know. So
about all of it, right? This is so interesting, okay.
Yeah. No,
I'm looking at my deck, and there's a big gravel thing underneath all of it already, and there are no weeds popping up through it. And he's got a boulder path around the side of it. So that's good to know.
That is good. That's great that
you have that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the other thing is, if the weed barrier is, I mean, if the whole thing is working right and you actually kill the vegetation underneath, you still will get weeds growing in that perimeter. Sure. I mean, but the thing is that they'll be growing from above the weed barrier, so they're super easy to pull.
Yeah, right.
Versus, like, the struggle of trying to get them out through the weed barrier.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of people, I mean, like Abby said, it's what she said is absolutely true. Like, you know, the low budget way is to just get rid of the vegetation and rake it down to bare mineral soil. I mean, that's still effective. But I think the reason why a lot of people do the weed barrier and gravel is because – with the bare mineral soil, you have to really maintain that. You've got to stay.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, Doug, I've got actually for everybody, but the question I have is, if you were to, you go through and you take all these dead leaves or the branches that are hanging down low and you've done this mitigation, what do you do with all the wood that you've created? I understand the term is slash piles. Do you just put them in a group and wait till winter, and then somebody comes out and burns it for you?
Well, before Doug answers, I would like to put a pitch in, Abby, for what
I'm glad you're doing it. I'm going to leave for 1 second.
Okay. I'm so glad to be Segway City here.
Well,
for you.
No, because the reason I wanted to jump in there is one of the things is we got grant money to start a chipping program this year for Wildfire Partners homeowners. So when you have slash, you can just stage it along the roadside and we will come and chip it and haul it away for you. So, you know, and you do need to sign up for that separately from just applying to Wildfire Partners, but it's all on our website. So, you know, remember that website I gave you, George, and just go there and you'll get all the information.
How the heck do you get it to the roadside though? I mean, I've got the terrain and everything. I suppose I got to get a truck or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Steve is playing the world's smallest violin for you there, George, because he's been hauling these rocks around his property this whole time. Sweat equity.
Yeah, okay.
I will tell you, George, when we moved into our house, the lovely homeowner we bought our house from left us like 5 huge slash piles on the property. We basically spent 3 straight days piling it into a pickup truck. Because that is the other option, you know, besides our chipping program, is Boulder County has sort yards. We have one in Netherland, and we have one in near Allen's Park in Meeker Park. And you can also haul slash to those sort yards and drop them off, and they take it for free. But we literally spent 3 straight days of piling slash into a truck and hauling it and losing tons of water weight.
I'm in a gully, and both sides of the house there are collections from the runoff in different areas that are near my house, but they're not my property. So I don't know, you know, I have to find out all that fun stuff too. And do you go ahead and do it, or I don't, Do you ask permission?
And what Abby can tell you too is in our assessments, we just look at the first 100 feet around your house, or possibly, you know, if you're on a slope, it might be larger, but she can talk more about that as well. So anyway, any other comments here? I'm trying to follow the, these are great comments from Steve as well. So
thank you, Steve.
A number of years ago, I bought a 10-inch shipper, so we do our own shipping. But yeah. It's important on this flyer I sent out. George, you're saying that your driveway was kind of curvy and hard to get to. One thing in a flyer, for the firefighter access, the driveway should be 12 feet wide, room for the turnaround, gates 12 feet, trees no less than 13 feet clearance. You want to make sure that your driveway, if something happens, the fire truck, a huge fire truck, can easily get to your house. And another note, too, I've heard this numerous times at the seminars that I've gone to. Firefighters will say, if I have a house A that's not mitigated and a house B that's mitigated, I'll put my crews on house B.
Sure.
That's really important.
Tell George the story. I remember I told Abby about how the firefighters raid the neighborhood and they go green, yellow, historic.
Why do they call it historic?
Yeah. So that's the rating system of whether they would defend it or not. Green, yellow, historic. Yeah. So green was, you know, it's well mitigated, you know, for sure. Yellow's maybe. Historic is that house is history. You know, that's what they meant by that. That house is history.
So. Our driveway
that is really interesting.
But there's no way to turn around on it, and we've already noted that it's even a challenge to get in and out of the drive for our own garage. So we're going to be doing some work. And I think to Abby's point earlier, and I think Doug was saying it's a constant battle. I know that there's going to be stuff I'm going to identify and start to build into the master plan, and have to do this stuff, you know, season after season. I love the idea of throwing my boots on and getting in there with a chainsaw and doing stuff. It's just a question of what to do with it.
Chaps. Yeah. Buy yourself a set of chaps.
Yeah.
I gave a chainsaw safety talk at the Black Forest some meeting down there. Annually, there are 36,000 visits to the ER because of chainsaw injuries, and they average 100 stitches per visit.
My father-in-law did all that stuff up in Wisconsin, and he has all the chaps. He's got the face mask. He's got the gloves and everything so it stops. It stops the chainsaw when it clogs it. I mean, there's knowledge here. I will be making some purchases.
So, George, I would encourage you. I'm so glad you're here tonight. Please apply to our program and please put in for the chipping program because it's free. It's all free this year. Like, you pay nothing.
Previous owner, I noticed that when I was looking at, I asked them to send us pictures of the garage so I could figure out stuff, and I noticed the chipper that he had. So I was like, wow, that's interesting that you have that. Now I know why.
Right. I mean, you know, you can also rent chippers if you don't have room or desire or quantity. I mean, you know, Doug has, what did you say, 200 acres or something down there? I mean, most of the properties.
200 I'm adding on as fast as I can.
Good for you. I like that.
We also want to give a shout out, which this can scare people during this time of year when we bring this up. But Boulder County during winter offers a free burn permit for slash piles as well. Mm-hmm. And we obviously, this would not be suitable conditions. They have very tight specifications for when you can do that. But in winter, when there's 5 inches of snow on the ground or more, that can be a very effective way to get rid of slash that's way down your property. That's hard to get, you know, to the sort yard or chipped or whatever.
Yeah. I think I saw that when I called it, for information about the weed whacking and the getting the mitigation inspection, and they said all these different services. They talked about the burning thing too. So that sounds cool.
Steve just wrote in. I'm just trying to pass this along to people if you didn't see it. He says we have done fires up here where, you know, to do that. So they can be very effective. And again, you know, in the wintertime, it can be a great way to do that. Abby.
Yeah, and I think fire, like slash burning, is really particularly well suited to properties where, like really large properties where you're not very close to a road most of the time. And yeah, I think people do get nervous about it, but I've done it myself many times and it's actually pretty fun. You just have to be sure you have the whole day free and you're not going out of town for another few days because you do want to keep checking it. And like embers shouldn't be a problem. Like one of the rules of slash burning is you have to have at least 5 inches of snow on the ground everywhere. So, you know, embers will be flying, but they're not supposed to, and then you also have to have wind under 10 miles per hour.
Yeah, there's a very, very specific set of conditions, and Boulder, if you just type Boulder County burn permits, you should get that web page that gives you all the details, and as Steve wrote, think of last February, feet of snow.
Yeah.
think of Abby right before Thanksgiving, wasn't it? Last year?
Yeah, I was going to say October, November. We had a lot of piles in this neighborhood.
Yeah, but I mean, last year the snow started early and we had that big storm in November and you could have easily done some great slash pile burn in November. So, yeah.
Well, and you know who did a ton of slash pile burning last winter was the Forest Service.
Yes, they did. Yes.
They were burning like tens of thousands of piles per week for a while.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I think we've given you all the options, George, for how to get rid of slash, I think. So, you know, anyway, Abby, any other comments?
I actually want to circle back to Steve for just a second and talk about his rock hauling problems because one thing that I started thinking about, too, was having had experience with this as well, like because I had to redo some of my perimeter around my house is if you're using heavy rocks, you might intersperse that with, like, gravel, which I was moving in just, like, 5-gallon, you know, Home Depot buckets. But being that I don't really like to overdo anything too much, I would just, like, fill them up half full, and then I'd be able to haul them up the hill. And I would just do, like, you know, 10 of them every evening after work or something. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how big your house is, but mine is not tiny. And, you know, 6 weeks later, I was finished. It's not, I'm not going to pretend it was like done in a second, but, you know, breaking it down into small bits, hand-sized rocks in a wheelbarrow. So, yeah, we're sort of in the same zone.
Yeah. And
well, I just encourage you to keep after it because I think once you're done, you're going to be really happy with the results and it'll – the backache will fade into, you know, just a distant, dull, burning, achy memory.
And it's a good excuse for a drink.
It's a good excuse to get yourself a massage when hopefully coronavirus ends and you can go back to that.
Oh, Steve just said he's on crutches right now. Well, that's unfortunate.
That makes it harder for sure.
Yeah, he definitely needs to, like, you know, hopefully when it's okay, he can bribe some friends to come over and help him. So, you know.
Or you could get a St. Bernard and get your dog to haul the wheelbarrow. Right.
I was going to say, you were talking about the buckets. I think my husband used the all-terrain wheelbarrow. I think that's what his method was. Like,
oh, nice.
Super-duper all-terrain wheelbarrow from McGuckin's. And, you know, he kind of did, you know, things of gravel and poured them and that kind of thing. But I do remember it taking quite a long time. So yeah, don't get it hard on yourself if this goes out as Steve as it has for Steve. It's okay. It's okay to take as much time. In fact, one of the things we tell people is we do not give you a deadline on when to get certified or complete your work. So, you know, if you got to take it in little bite-sized chunks, that's okay. So.
And full disclosures, I haven't finished my certification yet, too. So,
okay, so we got certified, but then we had to do a recertification because we did a detached garage, and we have not finished that and had Kyle sign off. So, Kyle, you can laugh about it, too. So. full humility.
Never give up.
Yeah, don't give up. So we have got about 8 minutes left. Do you guys have final comments, questions about mitigation, the program? what, Steve, any other comments?
Plan for the worst, hope for the best. I mean, just when the Black Forest fire happened, again, south of my house, We are pre-evac. My son comes over with his business associate, and my wife's got, she's organized all packing up everything in the car. My son looks at me and says, "Dad, what's important to you?" I said, "Everything." So he sent me to Home Depot to get my fire tank going, and he packed everything up for me.
Yeah.
But, luckily for us, the fire stopped coming north and it started going southeast.
George, you might want to listen to one of our earlier events we did on emergency preparedness, right, Abby?
I mean, yeah, that was a really good one.
Yeah, so that's what Doug just talked about is what we discussed in that earlier event was just, you know, having a plan and being prepared. And like
Doug, that was the note I just took.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? I'll tell you guys a little, like, hopefully short little story here because I live in. Leslie and I both live in fire areas as well, or areas of the county that have had fires. And I live in the 4 mile fire area, which started around 10 o'clock in the morning on a holiday weekend. And it started like 4 or 5 miles away from my house. So we got the evacuation notice and, you know, we're like, la, 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 we're packing the car. We knew we had plenty of time to get out of the house. And then fast forward a year or so later, there was like a little fire caused by some transients who were camping in March up right outside of Boulder. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, the police were knocking on the door of like maybe 600 people or something and evacuating them.
Wow.
And out of that 600 people, I bet like a good 150 of them signed up for our program very soon thereafter. And their experience was completely different. They were sound asleep. It was the middle of the night. Panic. They may have had a great plan. It went completely out of their heads. They were just in full-on panic mode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't even fire season in their heads. It was March. So my advice is keep it super, super simple. Mm-hmm. If it's, and someone told me, grab your laundry basket. You've got clothes. It's a container. You can throw your computer, laptop, phone, wallet. A small pet even can fit into the laundry basket. You grab it. You walk out the door. Don't look back.
Right. You know, Abby, when you said that too, 4 years ago today was the Cold Springs fire up here in Netherland. So I just realized that. I was like, oh, I looked at the
Oh, really? Today? Today?
It was 4 years ago today.
Well, and you know what? I want to put in a plug for Leslie's hilarious story about evacuation. If you listen to our the blog post from one of our previous, and I'm not going to spoil it at all. It's just, it's one of the stories of like what people grab when they're kind of in panic mode.
And how I learned from that experience, right, Abby?
Like, yeah, because that was before the Cold Springs fire,
I had a plan. We came home, we grabbed our fire boxes, we grabbed our pets, we grabbed our important items and our laundry hamper, and we were in and out in like 12 minutes, you know. So that there's a great story of me learning hard lessons, you know, and being better the second time around. So anyway.
Another seminar I went to that really kind of got to me. It was the end of the seminar, and this was after the Black Forest fire. And when the speakers got up there, she's a lady who lost her house in the fire. Mm. And she said, "God, it was such a powerful testimony." She says, "No one knows what it's like to lose a house because you lose everything that you've lived for." Mm-hmm. And people come up to me and they say, "I know how you feel." They don't know how you feel. It was such a powerful message. It woke me up.
And
don't lose your house.
There is something that I remember from the evacuations I've been through, especially the Cold Springs, because that was so close. And I always share this with people about mitigation. I say, you know, some people call us and they're on the fence about doing mitigation. You know, they're like, "Oh, I don't know." You know, like I don't. And I said, when you're evacuated, you're always thinking you wished you'd done more. You wished you'd done more. Like, that's how I felt. Like, oh, why didn't we do that gravel barrier or whatever? You know, like, you're thinking, like, why didn't – so I just share that with people because, you know, when you're kind of in your house all snug and there's no fires happening, it can be like, oh, I don't know if I want to complete all my items on my list. So that's why I'm saying to Steve, you keep at it, Steve. You know, that's – keep going.
It's a parallels back to the flood thing. I – had to evacuate my house twice because the river came out of its banks. I ended up doing all kinds of work like this. I basically built a perimeter around my house that I could throw sandbags in, and I basically had a moat, a reverse moat, right? It kept the water on the other side of it for exactly the same purposes. So the thinking and the logic here is comparable. Losing a house by fire, losing a house by water, I'm you know, drama or slow motion, and you know, it's I can't either is something I want to avoid. So I get it. You know, this is the thinking is very helpful here in the strategies.
Yeah.
Now some people they move to the forest. They've got these beautiful plush, beautiful trees behind their house, and they say, "I don't want to mitigate because this is what's natural." Well, what's natural? And I got this through another seminar we went to. Normally, a forest fire before man came in would burn in a forest every 20-25 years, and we'll kind of clean things out. But what man has done is we've stopped it. If you want a really really good book, I think it's called The Burn. Is about the largest forest fire in American history. But the point is we've stopped the natural cleansing of our forests.
Right.
And what's naturally out there is unnatural.
Right.
So we either have to, you know, let it burn down or let's jump it. And like you all are saying, mitigate. It's got to be done.
And that's what we talked about last month, Abby, was forest health, that actually mitigation creates a healthier forest, like around
meadows and forests.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, I don't know if you all are reading Steve's comments, which are like kind of fun to read too, but he was saying one of his comments is that he lost some family, ancestors in a forest fire back in the day. Great grandma was the survivor, and I gather everyone else didn't make it, which is pretty sad. But we are definitely through in our program, really, we emphasize preparedness. You know, getting your house ready, but also just like being ready to leave it. And, you know, Doug, I mean, I commend you for what you're doing, but our message is really like, don't shelter in place, get out of the way so that you're not like clogging the roads up, because we've seen so many tragedies, especially in California where, you know, there's maybe more population and similar or fewer roads where, you know, people have died somewhat unnecessarily because they just kind of ended up in gridlock trying to get out of a neighborhood.
That's the other documentary we would recommend on emergency preparedness is the Frontline documentary, right, on PBS about the campfire in Paradise. I think if you do Paradise Fire PBS or something, like, you'll find it. And it really drives home that point that Abby just made about, you know, being prepared and don't delay. Like, don't wait for the call. Don't wait for the call. Like, if you see the fire approaching or the smoke, you know, grab your stuff, you know, do with what's necessary to, you know, for your family and your pets and whatever else. So.
And George, I'm sure Mike will talk to you about this, but one other suggestion I would make as a new resident to a neighborhood is find out where your egress routes are and drive them in the broad daylight sometime and just see the different ways. Because your neighborhood has many egress routes, and then that one that you were talking about that I didn't even know about because I thought it was a gated road over into Sunshine, and there's some that go down into through Carriage Hills and – obviously, all just the ways you can get out a dozen different ways from your neighborhood.
Right.
You want at least two ingress egresses. And also, George, you said you live in a canyon?
Well, we're kind of on a sloping lot.
Okay, because in wildland firefighting, there's a chimney effect.
Right.
Where, you know, I don't want to tell you because you'll move.
But, I've heard.
You've heard it, which is the fire goes in the canyon and just swoops up the canyon.
Straight up.
I do want to say, like, as long as you have a good plan, it can work. I mean, Abby lives in a very different kind of spot where I am. Where we live, we're fortunate. We had two ways in and out. But some people don't have that. I mean, you can certainly, you know, try to be part of the community that lobbies for that. But also, if you have a good plan, you know, to keep yourself safe and to be prepared, you'll be okay either way. So
yeah, hit the rendezvous points and do all the different things.
And And that's part of your assessment too. I did want to let you know that, George. Okay. We do have a section called emergency preparedness, and we do have items there, you know, to, like, if you weren't aware of them, we'll put them as part of your recommended things to work on. So
my wife is going to love this because it's just more toys for me to get.
Okay. Steve just wrote another note. We also have an even smaller group on our road, and we found on the obvious standing dead all along Divide Drew Drive. Yeah, he's in that Coal Creek area, isn't he? Yeah. So, well,
I love what he said about how the fire chief came and helped when they did a community cleanup. Yes. You know, I mean, that's one of the things that these guys, I mean, first of all, our firefighters, not all of them in Boulder Mountain, but in a lot of the districts here are all volunteers. And they're, like, putting their lives on the line for the community. And it seems like we could certainly show them some love by doing what we can to help with that, too.
Yep. Agreed.
You know, and I love, I mean,
really
Coal Creek Canyon
Green, Yellow, Historic.
Green, Yellow, Historic. We all want to be green.
Yeah, we all want to be green. Yeah, so final comments, Abby, because we have reached the end of our time, but final comments?
I really love, it's been great having all of you, and I love how this has been a little more sort of personal and interactive, and I also really love that Steve, even though he hasn't been able to speak, has been really contributing, and one thing that is really awesome about the area of the county that he works, that he lives in, is that they do a lot of community projects there, and, you know, it's really inspiring, and, our community does some, but not to that degree, and it's more like we get together and hire people to come do, take care of things.
The Thousand Slaws group is amazing, and we hosted one at our house. I think I told you that, Abby, and it's just really impressive. I, the way I describe it, it's like an Amish barn raising in reverse. So instead of putting up the wood, you're taking down the wood, and it's very community focused. And you get so much work done in one day. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Many hands make light work.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve.
I think if they had saws and slaws in every community, that would be awesome. I mean, they're great groups. So, yeah. Okay. Well,
thank you. Thank you so much. This has been very edifying for me, and I appreciate it. And I look forward to digging more through the website and learning, and hopefully becoming certified.
And I want to say a special thank you to both Doug and Steve, because I think you guys contributed a lot to our discussion tonight. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the info.
I picked up a lot as well. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks for the help.
And Doug, you know, hopefully you guys will end up with a program down in Douglas County that will help homeowners too. I mean, I think it's the wave of the future coming together.
Very true.
So we'll be back at it next month in August, and we'll try to do a better job of getting the word out to everybody, because we kind of switched things up this month and threw everybody a curveball. But we're glad that you guys were here tonight. So
it's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye.